Welcome to the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. We're so pleased that you're spending part of your day with us here. I'm Troy Skinner, pastor of Household of Faith in Christ, online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Joined this week by Imran Razvi and Daniel Razvi. They pastor a church in Thurmont called the church that meets at Imran's house. And they also have a ministry called Conquered by Love Ministries, online at conqueredbylove.org. You can connect with them through that website. So we've been talking about, well, we started out several weeks ago talking about things that are definitively Christian and we should be looking for in a definitively biblical Christian church. And then we, the Defense of Marriage Act came up and the Obergefell decision and all that. And so we started talking more specifically about marriage and that sort of thing. And that's kind of what we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. And we're going to clean up some thoughts on that this week and then swing back around to the questions you should ask your pastor and your and what you should be looking for in a good church. So it's been brought up at least last week's show, maybe the week before that I might have brought it up too. There's a bit of a movement. You see it mostly on social media, but it feels like it's getting some traction outside of just social media argumentations. It feels like there's some young men particularly that are drawn to this idea of what is called kinism or the kinist movement. And so simplest way to think about this is, you know, country folk, they talk about their cousins and their aunts and their uncles as you're my kin, right? You're family, you're kin, you're from the same place. Like you might meet somebody, you know, you're vacationing in Maryland, but you're from Alabama and you run into somebody else from Alabama. You're from Alabama? Well, you're like kin, right? So you're ethnically somehow connected, culturally connected. There's something about you that there's a sameness and it's kind of bloodlines, though, too, in the kinist movement. So some people would talk about you need to stay married within your race. I don't like that language because I believe that there's, physically speaking, one race.
One race.
There is a spiritual race, right? Peter talks about it in the New Testament, that we are made a royal nation, a holy people. And the
Greek, spiritually, there could be more than one race.
The Greek there could be translated as race. And so there's a spiritual race, but we're talking about physical realities here. So there's one race. We all descend from Adam and Eve.
More specifically, all from Noah.
And all from Noah, for that matter. Correct. Sure. So I grew up with some of this in the Chicagoland area where there were some people in my family actually, that, you know, they were the opinion that whites should marry whites and blacks should marry blacks and Hispanics should marry Hispanics. And, you know, and for that matter, in the neighborhoods, Irish should marry Irish and German should marry German and, you know, French should marry French, whatever. Now it's connected, part of, we've talked about this at length on a number of shows over the last number of months anyway, the Christian nationalist movement. And it seems like a lot of people that are drawn, not everybody, so don't misunderstand me. If you're a big Christian nationalist person, I'm not saying that you're a kinist, but it seems like a certain percentage of the Christian nationalist people, the people that like that label or embracing that label, they're really drawn to, in a big way, this kinist idea. Because they're trying to preserve the cultural norms. They're trying to preserve their nation as they understand it. And so like needs to stay with like. We need to do this. So in the context of marriage, I don't think that we, given the cultural climate and things are being talked about, particularly online, and you know, the listener to this podcast, if you're listening on a podcast or listening to this radio show, if you're listening on the air, you've maybe run across it, and we're going to spend 2-3 shows talking about marriage, and we never bring up kinism. You'd be like, okay, were they ducking it? Are they not wanting to talk? I feel like we have to talk about it. It's an emerging elephant in the room. It's not a large elephant. It's a newborn baby elephant right now, but it has the potential to grow into being a really, really large elephant. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the left would immediately say, you racist person that would think that you can only marry somebody that looks the same as you. But a lot of the left is also pushing the same sort of thing.
And they would say it's cultural appropriation if you marry somebody from a different culture.
Right.
You know, so you can't win either way.
You can't win.
The whole thing is it biblical or is it not? And I think, you know, 80 years, 100 years ago in this country, there was a lot more kinism because you had to stay within your culture. Irish did marry Irish, and Germans did marry Germans, and blacks did marry blacks, and whites married whites, and that's how it was. But we came a long way, baby, right? And then then what happened? Then we elected the first black president, and thing all went to hell. I mean, we got so many more racists after Obama got elected.
And ironically, he's not
even black. He's half
right,
white.
So half he violates the whole Kinnist ideal right off the bat.
So the question, though, is what does God say about it? And I think God does make it very clear that we are all descended from Adam, all descended from Noah. Now, God did create different nations, and he called Israel to himself as a people, and he did actually command Israel not to marry other,
tribes.
But specifically in the context of religion, right, of faith. Because if another tribe, a stranger, comes and converts to Judaism, well, now you can marry them. Right. It was all about what is the purpose of this person coming in. What you can't do is form alliances with other cultures or other religions. You can't say, "Well, we'll you can keep all your culture and your religion and your gods and stuff, and we'll just marry." That's what was forbidden, and that's still forbidden for Christians. You cannot marry somebody who is not a Christian, and not just call themselves a Christian, but actually has a biblical worldview. You should not marry somebody, but it doesn't matter what they look like. More matters what they're committing to do. And so if somebody wants to convert to Christianity and then marry a Christian, that's perfectly fine. But what you cannot do is go and mix that with a different kin. And really, I mean, one of my friends talks a lot about, the heavenly polity. We are of a political alliance, which is a spiritual race. And so that's kind of gets what you said. You know, there are more than one race, actually, spiritually. And that's really where your focus needs to be. So, yes, you can only marry your kind, Troy, but your kind is Christian. It's not different colors or different nose shapes or ear shapes or, different holidays, when you celebrate Thanksgiving and what you eat for turkey dinner. Do you deep fry it or do you broil it? You know, those types of things are not what you marry based on. You marry based on your race, which is the Christian race.
And I think that there's some practical political cultural things that are behind, that are driving this. I think it's a reactionary movement. By the way, while Daniel was talking, I was racking my brain because I mentioned it's, you know, the Apostle Peter wrote it in the New Testament, but that was rather vague. If you want to look it up, I think I've now accessed that part of my brain. I'm pretty sure it's 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 9 and 10 is where you'd want to look for the holy nation, royal people. And if you look at the Greek, you can see that language there could also be translated as race. So it's a people, it's a nation, it's a race, it's an ethnos, it's a... So anyway, so that's what's going on there. Anyway, if you watch TV, and I don't watch anywhere near as much as I once did, but I still watch some on occasion. I have a son who's adult disabled, and he loves some couple of game shows that are part of his routine. And so I sit and watch those with him, and so you see some commercials. And I'm telling you, there's an agenda. Incredibly disproportionate percentage of married couples that are featured in these commercials are
same sex.
There's two men that are supposedly married or two women that you feel like, yeah, they're probably lesbians, but also black husband,
different
white wife,
different shades of
or
color. Yeah.
Chinese wife, Hispanic husband, like lots of inter-ethnic households represented on TV. And those exist, and I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. But
no.
As a percentage, the overwhelming majority of people marry someone that has the same skin tone and a similar cultural background that they do. There are exceptions.
And a lot of that really.
But as a percentage, and it's like half the marriages you see on commercials. There's an agenda.
And a lot of that really doesn't have to. I mean, if you try to figure out why do they marry people that generally look like them, it's not so much the looks, although. That they may have something to do with it. You may just find certain people to be more attractive because they look like you, and you're attracted to that kind of person.
That's what you're used to seeing. Yeah,
right. All the people you've met or look like that, and so that's what looks good to you. And something else looks different, and people don't like different. But that doesn't. But most often, culture does play a big role, and the left and the media would like us to believe that culture matters not at all in the context of marriage, because you marry for sex and for love and whatever. But no, I mean, you're trying to raise a family together. And so the way you treat that family and how you view the family and what you think marriage is supposed to be in the first place, all of that is informed by your worldview. And that, yes, that should be religion first, should be Christianity first. But besides that, just different cultural expectations of what the husband should do, what the wife should do, what the kids should be doing, how they should be trained and taught. that's going to matter a lot, and you should be discussing those things before you get married. Now, you might meet somebody from China who has some of those similar worldviews, and I would venture to say you are going to have a, if you're listening to this and you're a man from Frederick, Maryland, you probably have a lot more in common with a Chinese Christian woman than somebody who lives on, you know, East Patrick Street, who is, you know, a bleeding heart liberal that doesn't ever go to church. You have a lot more common than some other random, but even though her culture is very different, but the most important parts of the culture, you actually do have something in common. But the rest of the culture does matter too, so you would want to discuss all those things. What does she think about kids? How many kids make sense? The things we talked about last week. So I think that's where I would come back. But the primary thing needs to be, are you marrying within your race spiritually? Spiritually, because there is only one race physically, but with there are multiple races spiritually.
Yeah. Now, some of the people I see them. I don't know if you guys spend any time on social media, really, but I'm telling you, the whole idea about skinheads and the white supremacy movement, it really is there. You know. So I'm not going to say, oh, you're making that up. Those people exist, and they're a really small but very vocal group on certain social media platforms, particularly Gab, by the way, is just unbelievable. And a lot of those kinds of people, it seems to me that they're advocating these kinist ideas because they hate people that don't look like them, right? They are white supremacists, and black people are subhuman, and Jewish people are the worst things in the world, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But then there's these Christian nationalist types that are more reasonable-minded. They lean in a kind of a kinist light direction. So it's more like, well, we're not saying that you can't or that it's a sin or there's anything wrong, but really you shouldn't, because you want to rebuild America and make America culturally what it was in 1953. And the way to do that is have, you know, Ward Cleaver marrying whatever his wife's name was and giving birth to Beaver Cleaver, you know, and Leave It to Beaver becomes the American ideal. So there's this, like, it's like this pressure, like, well, you don't have to. And then some of them even say things like, heck, I've got inter-ethnic people in my family, you know, my sister married somebody that's different, so I'm not opposed to it, but it's not the ideal. And I think even that's going too far. I think people will naturally be drawn to, like you said, they're drawn to what is familiar, like attracts like in these sorts of contexts. And I don't think you have to artificially try to promote it or push it. There's something that feels icky about promoting it, to be honest, to me. So anyway, that's my thoughts on kinism.
Well, this country was supposed to be the melting pot, right? And it, even though it acted like that sometimes, it certainly didn't act like that. You know, we, as Americans, abused Chinese, we abused Irishmen, we abused American Indians. And I'm saying we, even though
Italians.
Even though I'm a recent immigrant.
Anybody from the Middle East, right?
Yeah.
But particularly the last 25 years.
Yeah, that didn't happen until the last 25 years or so, 30 years. But, you know, it's all around the world, people had restrictions on who you could marry. Kings could only marry other kings and their daughters or sons. And in India, if you're part of a certain caste, you can't marry outside your caste. You have to marry within that caste. In Islam, there's usually certain families you can marry into and other families you cannot marry into. In Chinese, there's certain families that are approved to be married and certain families that are not. So it's been a worldwide phenomenon. It's nothing new. It's the way that people try to discriminate against undesirables, whatever they decide is undesirable. And my wife is ethnically from German descent, and I'm from the Middle East. And we were a mixed ethnic couple, and you know, early on in our marriage, we got a lot of looks. This was, you know, 30-some years ago, and we got a lot of looks, but then that changed and became much more acceptable, and I don't see that as a problem. But again, as you're saying, it's moving back towards that. And more recently,
yeah, you guys actually—it's not just you; other people in your family, right? It's been you have a lot of inter-ethnic mixed things, and these kinists that are the kinist light—they always say, "Well, it's fine that you did that, but it probably would have been better if you didn't." And I'm like, "Why? No. Why would it be better? No. They stop. Don't do that."
I think they—I
don't understand what they're thinking.
They think that the original American principles cannot be upheld by other people. And that's totally wrong. I mean, look at this guy that was running for president, Ramesh Swamy, right?
Yeah, Vivek.
He had a lot of the Christian nationalist type of beliefs or conservative
beliefs.
There's
no side of any issue that Vivek won't take.
I understand. But what he was definitely making known in the famous part of his campaign was very much traditional Judeo-Christian principles. And he's Hindu, right? He's not even Christian.
Right.
And he's certainly not white. So the point is, just because you look a certain way doesn't inform your culture and your worldview necessarily. But
it,
those
doesn't
are questions
mean
to ask.
You're going to be against the culture that this country used to be 200 or 300 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I think we have. It turns out that the panel that we have for the faith debate is a really good panel to talk about the Kinnis question because of your family experience and you're exactly right. You guys stand for what America's supposed to be about and stuff and. Okay, you don't look like a German or a Brit, so what? It's so ridiculous. It's annoying because some people that are really, really smart and good and right about other issues, they tend to undercut their credibility in my eyes by going down this kind of road. We're a little past the halfway point. By the way, I'm Troy Skinner. You've been hearing Imran and Daniel Razvi speak as well. This is the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. So in the 10-ish minutes we have left, it can go as rapid fire.
Lots of time.
You can go as rapid fire as you want, but over the last month of shows, we've been talking about things you should be looking for in a church, and some of them were obvious. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, we talked about the big things like what this church stands on abortion or marriage or women pastors and things like that. And those should be very easy knockouts that you should be able to determine right away. You don't need a lot of weeks to figure that out.
Yeah, but Daniel said there's some borderline red flag issues we should probably bring
right.
up. So
things that are not necessarily explicit in the scripture. Yeah. You can't point to a verse and pin it down, but these are some things I want you to hear as a listener. If your church has like multiple of these, it may be something that you want to be more cautious about. And it may still be a very biblically based church, but there could be something starting in the ranks that's not good. So, for example, if you're attending a church or considering attending a church, you should find out, is there a small enough congregation that you could personally have every family over to dinner in your house in, let's say, less than a year, realistically? Is it small enough that you could actually personally know everybody's name, all their kids' names in that congregation? If it's not, then it's probably a big enough church that you're not going to get the proper discipleship and you're not going to have the fellowship of the saints that you need.
And that's really countercultural in today's church culture.
You
right?
want to be in the,
bigger is better.
Yeah, bigger. You want to be in the vibrant, the growing church.
So, you're basically saying like 50 or smaller, kind
of,
right?
Yeah, I think you can reasonably know maybe
150,
100,
maybe.
100 to, maybe even 200 on the high end, especially if there are a lot of large families.
Well, the problem with that, though, is most churches that only have like 100 to 200 people in them, they can't afford fog machines.
Well, that will be another red flag. If your church uses fog machines regularly in the church service, I think that would probably be a red flag. and so that gets into, we'll get to that in a minute. One mark of a good church I know in Nebraska, there was a church recently that was very biblically based, and they were getting to that big point. They had like 200, 250 people, and the pastors and elders made a conscious decision to have a church split. An amicable church split. Say we need to split into three different churches, and they did, so that they could better manage their flock.
They planted two churches.
Exactly.
They had the one, and they planted two more.
And so, because they said we cannot disciple everybody adequately with the amount, and people can't know each other and fellowship with each other to the same extent that they could.
Why didn't they just like go meet in different places, but have one pastor video conference in his message into the other locations? Why not do that?
Well, again, your pastor needs to know you. And if you don't
because
know
then your pastor becomes God. You're following this one pastor, 10,000, 30,000, 50,000 people are following this one pastor. Aren't there other pastors, other leaders that can be there and that can minister to you?
And those multi-campus things where they video pipe it in.
If your church has more than one campus, it's probably another red flag,
it's
right?
very celebrity. Yeah. Right.
So let's talk about the worship service. You go to church on Sunday morning or Saturday if you're Seventh-day Adventist or Messianic, right? You go to church. And what do they do before the sermon? Most of them have some kind of music. Either they sing or they play some music. Maybe some people sing, other people listen. If it feels more like a concert, that's probably a red flag. regardless of what you stand on the music question, I would say if there's a drum set and a guitar, that's probably a red flag also for a number of reasons. And we probably will have a whole show on music in the church. But I have personally witnessed multiple churches start playing more contemporary music as one of the first stumbling blocks before they start to falter on some more weighty issues such as the marriage and the you know, other doctrinal. Yeah. Music is one of the first things to go. Time and time again, I've personally seen it. That's not a study I've done, you know, scientific study. I just have witnessed a lot of it, and I think there's some good reasons why. When you're the more traditional the music is, the older and more boring you might think the music is. If you have a modern pop culture type of music taste, if you think the music's pretty boring, that's actually probably a green flag. But because it really needs to be, and Luther and Zwingli and a lot of the reformers had some interesting things to say about music. They said the purpose of the music is to honor God. If you're focused on the music, you're not focused on God. The music should be helping you to be focused on God. And if you're thinking about the person performing or singing or playing instruments, then you're not focused on God anymore. So that would be a red flag if the church has a large focus on music as a centerpiece of the worship service, and especially if you're doing a lot of listening and not a lot of participating in the music.
And people have said, the music moves me. I feel spiritual with the music. That's not what it should
be. And there's something said for the older music, and here's one of the reasons why. It's not that the music was automatically better 200 years ago. Oh, let me say something for a second.
It's not that the music was automatically better a couple hundred years ago. I think where you're going is for the
I had to do something lyrics on the stream for half a second there.
You're talking about the lyrics, right?
Well, yeah, the lyrics and even just the singability and different things that are important in congregational worship. You know, people have to be able to hit the notes. So things like that. It's not like every song that Isaac Watts or Charles Wesley ever wrote was just a grand slam home run, but the best of their songs have survived to this day. So there are probably songs, I don't know if Daniel agrees with it, there are probably songs that have been written within the last 10 years that God's people, assuming Christ doesn't return in the meantime, will still be singing 500 years from now.
I agree with that.
But the percentage of the songs that are coming out now that will still be sung in 500 years from now is going to be very small. But I don't know, what is it, 1%, 5%, 10%? The point is, the majority of the songs aren't good enough to stand the test of time. The songs that are in those old hymnals that are still being sung,
or the
those
Psalms
are the ones that have stood the test of time. And so those old, same with old, with books too, by the way. You read some of the classics, you know, John Owen or John Edwards or Martin Luther or John Calvin. I mean, these are works that have stood the test of time. And you might not agree with everything they say, but this has been well vetted.
So what are some other red flags? We have time for any more? So
sure, you got like maybe a minute and a half.
All right. So some other things you should be thinking about. If you're going to the church and you go in, and as soon as the church service is over, everybody scatters and they all go home, and nobody ever stops to talk to anybody and ask them more than hi, how are you doing, you know, then that's probably a red flag. You want a church that is a fellowship. The commandment in Hebrews is forsake not the fellowship. It doesn't say forsake not the church service, forsake not the worship service. It says forsake not the fellowship. That's the purpose of a church service, is to fellowship with other believers. And if you're going to a lecture and you're listening to a sermon or a lecture and you're listening to a concert, then that's not fellowship. That's a concert and a lecture, which you could get on YouTube. You know, you don't need to go to a church service for that. So what you need to be getting from your church service is fellowship with other believers. That's not just from the pastor. It's also all the other congregations. So I think those are some things really to think about.
That's a pretty good one to end on, I think. And, you know, the fellowship thing, remember, we don't use this language as much as we maybe could or should, but, you know, we're brothers and sisters in Christ. And so we come together. It's a family meeting. It's a family reunion. You know, and so every week the family is coming back together so that they can be in fellowship, if you want to use that word, so we can love each other, we can be in relationship, we can talk to each other. That's why it's a huge red flag if nobody's talking to each other. What kind of family is this? What kind of family never talks to one another, right? So it should feel like, oh, they're family. Like, they love each other. They're involved in each other's life. It's not just, hey, how's the weather? It's, hey, how'd that job interview go last week? You should be able to overhear things where you can tell they know something about one another's lives. Like, they're living life together.
And that was one of the red flags that happened to you when you went to the Capitol building. There was no fellowship.
Yeah, going back like a month ago. Yeah, the pastors were not talking to each other like they were brothers. It was a little stunning and discouraging, to be honest with you. But hey, I'm over it now. Look at me, all smiles. Anyway, so that the last voice you heard there was Imran Raz Razvi. Before that, you heard Daniel Razvi. I'm Troy Skinner. This is the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. We'll be back next week, probably a different kind of a panel assembled, because we're shutting down this arc of shows. We'll have a different topic next time. I'm not sure what it is yet, but we'll figure it out between now and then. So until then, 167 and a half hours from right now, God bless.